people who are different from ourselves, a suspicion of the other, and a coarsening of the debate. So it used to be that we would talk on a panel like this, which is very open and non-combative, and now as a political analyst, I find myself arguing against people who say, well, learning languages, that's a load of rubbish, isn't it? We can't let these people in because they're going to bomb us. And that's a direct quote. What is really terrifying when it comes to human rights in general and women's rights in particular is that the rights that we feel that we have naturally as people, the right to not be raped, stoned, harassed, we think of those as inborn. We walk down the street and we don't think someone is going to harass me right now. Someone's going to do something right now. They can be taken away from you. All it takes is to have a government, a dictator, a leadership, whatever it is, who decides that that's not important, and to have a media that goes along with it, to have a media that reports on, I don't know, the way that when a woman is killed by her partner, all it takes is for a tabloid newspaper to say, woman killed after she snubbed her ex-husband, and you think, no, the woman was killed because the perpetrator chose to enact endemic violence against her. Yeah. It's the perpetrator's choice and responsibility and decision. But the messaging has changed. And these all become part and parcel of each other. So everything we're talking about in terms of the shift towards the right, towards dictatorships, Daesh and ISIS, yes, they are extremely repressive towards everyone, but they are also gendered. It's about machismo. It's about macho, violent, aggressive behavior. It's about creating this narrative whereby these guys are, they're in a story in their own heads, right? They are the hero of some kind of story. And part of that heroism involves violating and abusing and dehumanizing, yes, men and boys, but also women and girls who are not even seen as human. And at the same time, you mentioned Trump, which is so interesting because there's a great tendency to be a women's activist and then to say quite patronizingly, I think, well, here in London or Hull or wherever, it's all so super, but over there in the dark countries, it's terrible the things they do. And to pathologize other countries and nations. In fact, if you read around internationally, the things which are being done to women are the same. Rape, so-called domestic violence, which is just terrorization by the people who say they love you most, husbands, boyfriends, fathers, uncles, brothers, the people who are supposedly closest to you, sexual harassment, judgment, objectification, all of these things are completely endemic here, there, and everywhere. So a very recent, very startling survey in the UK found that 47% of young women had experienced abuse in the UK, and that the most at-risk group was girls between 13 and 19. Right. And if you take a long view, that's devastating, because I wanted the generation younger than me to be the ones who were enlightened, boys and girls alike, to have completely different, transformed relationships, to not be rapists and victims and perpetrators or self-harming or hating themselves. And so you look at the generation which is coming up and you think, there's going to have to be another wave of activism and of speaking out. And wherever you go in the world, America or Afghanistan or any country in between, what is done to women who speak up is always exactly the same, and it's very simple. They just don't believe us. So we women are supposed to keep a dignified silence. And when we do that, we keep our perpetrators secret. If I were, and I'm not going to do this, but if I were to sprinkle a truth rain on the audience and say, put up your hand if you've experienced or witnessed abuse, it would be nearly everyone. And if I were to say, yeah, no, let me stop there because I don't want to trigger anyone, but that is how common it is. And we stay quiet, not deliberately to protect the perpetrator, but because we internalize it. We know we won't be believed. We internalize the shame. We are afraid of telling people. We don't expect to be believed by the police, by courts, by juries. We think, what's the point? We've already been humiliated. How can I go through and basically be put on trial for what was done to me? And that's the case all over the world. So I think the most radical thing we can do is tell our truth. And when we hear someone else's truth, to believe, because we're not lying, we're not exaggerating, we haven't made a mistake. And only when the toxic matter comes out can we acknowledge that the abuse of women is completely endemic, even in a world in which the abuse of men and boys is also endemic. But there's that particular extra secret toxic bit, the secret that we all keep.
I'm really interested in coming back to this idea of starting from a point of distrust, because I think across the globe that it's human nature to do that. Politics in particular, I think you have the outsider looking into politics. I certainly start with a point of distrust there. But I think in society today, especially for women and girls, and for migrant people, for asylum seekers, it's almost like they have to evidence their experience. Why? Where do we go from there? How on earth do you come back from that? But we're going to come back to that if we may. Winnie, I'd like to bring you into this. You came to Hull 17 years ago. You yourself have an incredible story to tell. Can you bring to life your experience?
Okay. So, can you hear me? Hiya. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Chinese, and English is my second language. Sometimes, if I can't think about English, I may say Chinese. You understand Chinese? 你好. All right. So, yeah, I came to Hull 3 years now. I came to UK 17 years. No problem. 17 years. Back to 2000, I came to the UK. The place is my favorite country because of, Chinese, China was back to 17 years ago, still traditional and a huge country, especially my parents, my father. He's a nice guy. I'm really appreciate, but something he done wrong for me, but I don't like it. For example, I'm only the girl in the family. I have one older brother and one younger brother. And I'm only the girl in the family. But in China, most of people, they don't like the girl. When I born, my father see me and turn back and go out to work. When afterward, when I remember something, and my mom told me, I thought, hang on 1 second. You don't like the girl. How about your mom? Where are you born from? But I can't, face to my father, say, ask him this question. Otherwise, he will be slapped me, But, and from that day, gave me the question, many question mark. Why my father like this? When I grow up, not only my father, other many families, my classmates, they say the same as me. And another question came out again. I said, hang on 1 second. Why this country like this? Why the family like this? Why my father, her father, she father, or et cetera, et cetera. So, at that time, my father said, you only go school for now enough. Was that time I'm in secondary school. I say, why? My father said that you should be off school, help me, we have the fruit garden or orchard garden. But was that time I'm no power to fight back with my family or my father. So I just follow his order. And by that time, I study myself. I haven't got any secondary school book, but I buy the book, I learn it by myself in the, bush or fruit garden or orchard garden. I learn it every day. And I thought one day, I'm on the top. But you don't give me enough education in the school, but I want my power, I learn it other way, and one day you will be proud of me, I thought in my mind. But my father told me, why you do this? You plant the fruit or some plant. Why you need this? The girl, you don't need any more education. If the more education, that is no good for your life. I thought that is no right. So that's why this is another story bring up. When I grow up, was 19 years old, and my father said, you have to marry to some boy or someone else. It's time to. I said, I don't want it. I want to go to college. I want to learn something. And he pushed me, and I married with one guy who is I don't like it. But I still no power. And that's too many questions and too many pushes and too many that's controls. I don't like it. I said, how can I do? And I learning the many, many things from the video, TVs. I thought, this country must be going down. And which country is freedom? And I learned in the book, they say, United Kingdom. That's I talk the truth from my heart. And one day, I married with the man, and which I don't like it. Again, that family control me again. So you can speaking only ladies. You cannot speaking outside of a family, the men or guys or boys. That many questions pushed me. I can't breathe. And I'm crying all day, all time. And one day I determined, I said I want divorce. And the guy said, my former husband said, if you divorce with me, I will kill you. I said, okay, even you kill me, I don't care, because I need to find a woman or ladies right in this world, in this planet. And eventually, I'm divorced. And I came to this country, which I found that is the nice country. But when after the 17 years, now, which I found, something not really right, like you said, the woman in this world, by control by the men or by some others, is the same, but slightly, it's less than my country or in China. But what I'm trying to say, the dream, the voice in my deep of my heart still telling me, Winnie, you are the number one. You are the only one. You can fight your life and you can do something in your life. You know, that I continue to learning, continue to develop myself. And I open my own business and I do the talk show. I shake hand with the gentleman, with the men in the world. Was that time I'm in London. And I thought, I can do it. I can do it. Ladies, I can do, I speak in the broken English. You can do too.
Thank you so, so much. Inspirational. What a message. And what an experience. Before we came down to sit here, I was considering the ongoing discussion and the reasoning behind WOW. Why do we need it? Do we need it? Do we?
Yes.
But I'm asking this provocative question because all over there seems to be far too much. Yeah, you're all right now. There are things in place. Legislation exists. That in this country is the big call out. We have the legislation. Do we really need to be having a conversation about women's rights? Hosanne?
Yes, indeed. Always. Because I think we are still... shall I use this? Okay. I think we still have a very long way, really, for women to feel safe in this world, in my opinion, to feel that they can do anything without restriction and without being put down or overlooked because they are not men. You know what I mean? The category man is idealized, is glorified. It has become the most important thing in the world, that women can never reach to that level, that women can never do it. Even if they could, they could only go halfway. So this is the entire rhetoric, I think, everywhere, really. And that's why it's very important for us to continue not to only have this debate, but to have far more different verified various activities as well, through art, through literature, through poetry, through political debates, through demonstrations, through forming groups and initiatives in the neighborhoods, at the city level, at the country level, nationwide, internationally, to reach out to each other. Struggles are very difficult to survive without international sisterhood and solidarity. And I think what we need is to bring back that notion or that feeling and emotion of sisterhood, of solidarity. If a woman gets killed in Kurdistan, it's the same as a woman gets killed in England. There is no different. We are all human. There's a saying, it says, one injury is an injury to all. So as a woman, why don't we have this feeling? Why don't we look at the other person just because of the skin color as the other? What happens to them is no matter. It's not our business. It is my business. You know, when my neighbor is screaming because her husband is beating her up, it's my duty to intervene, to get the police or to get something to help her not to be killed or not to be abused. These are the kind of, even on personal level, we need to be reaching out to each other, really. And I don't see that as happening all the time. We need to remind ourselves that nobody is safe. I'm going out of this place. Maybe I go darker in the night. I don't feel safe as a woman. It's a matter of fact that women are not safe even in the safest countries for men. So this is the problem. Safety, security, status, lots of other things are still attributed to men. And for us, it takes 200 times more effort to actually break some of the barriers. There are huge barriers that need to be broken down at a state level, at a, constitution level, politically, socially, economically speaking. Why austerity measures, affected women so badly? Like, there was a debate yesterday in Parliament, 86% of the suffering, of the problems, of the result is on our shoulders. We keep all the heavy burdens and we don't say it. We have to speak out loud. We have to say it. We have to say that at home, at work, and everywhere, it's on our shoulders. You know, the result of horrible politics. Trump comes to power today. Tomorrow, he tries to ban abortion. You know, the first thing they do is to attack women's rights. It's, we are the easy target, and that's not nice. As women, we have to be the hardest targets, in my opinion. We have to be non-broken. We have to be mobilized. And what we need is mobilization and political mobilization, really. And that's what we lack. Let's not just give issues to the charities to put a plaster on a wound. You know, when there are hundreds and thousands and millions of women in this country who suffer abuse and domestic violence and they don't even get heard of. So it needs a political mobilization. It needs a political movement. I think the second wave feminism was a good example. I'm not very happy with the third wave feminism, in my opinion, because they really scattered women far more because of color and race and this and that. I think we need a new kind of mobilization and movement that is worldwide, international. It cuts across borders and race and gender and this and that, and that we have to fight back collectively. Otherwise, you know, if we are individualized, isolated, me in my island, you in your island, we are easily ruled by patriarchal powers, by the state, by the ruling elite. That's why we are a weak target now. Despite the struggles that we have, despite the struggles that we lead in different parts of the world, but we need to be much more unified and far more fierce in defending our rights and call for more rights, actually. Thank you very much. That's yours.
I'm very conscious of time and only wish we had days, years.
We can do it again.
More. this is an incredible starting point. I think what's clear is that we need to own the conversation.
Exactly.
We need to own the headlines on those front pages. Mm-hmm. Why are we allowing somebody else to own them? To control the conversation here in this city and across the globe. And with that in mind, I am going to throw out the conversation to the audience. Does anyone have any questions? Any lady there?
Thank you very much. I'm sorry, I destroyed my voice before in the singing workshop. I thank you very much for all your contributions. I'm very impressed with the panel. I'm very impressed by the WOW Festival in general. And specifically because we are situated within the mega event of UK City of Culture, I would be very curious about a comment or a thought about the question how art links in with the question of political struggle, with the question of fight for human rights, for women's rights. If you could link it to the question of art. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think art, social justice, art and activism since the dawn of man has been around. And for someone that works as part of the Freedom Festival Arts Trust, we always are amazed and inspired by the artists we meet and engage with across the globe, women and children, boys, men, that are using art as a means to open up that important dialogue. Badisha?
No, it's a great question, because if you're working in arts, there's a tendency to produce your work and then think, what's it for? What's it doing? There is a reason why the first thing that repressive governments do is start locking up journalists and artists. Why? Because artists and journalists, we're free. We can produce just anything, and that is very frightening to people like Trump or Putin, right? Because they are very fragile people. But generally speaking, within the arts, it's about taking up space. And if you're into the arts, I'm sure you know about the Guerrilla Girls' long body of work, where they go into these great arts institutions and they find out that 7% of the paintings were created by women, but 98% of the nudes are of women. And they put up these great posters and give the statistics. So all the way, you know, the arts industries are patriarchal also, because they were produced by patriarchal cultures from the roots to the branches. And so every single woman, artist, writer, filmmaker, critic, journalist who is creating her space is taking up political and social and cultural and literal space. We are doing that on this stage right now. When you hang a painting, you are taking up space. That's powerful in itself, and in addition to that is the message that you're putting across. So it's absolutely vitally important. Everything is political. Every single thing we do is political. It's either passively accepting the status quo and reproducing the messages that we've been taught and internalized, or it's kicking against it in some way. So it's vitally important. And if you look at active world revolutions which are carrying on even now, arts and culture have been a huge part of it. So in Tahrir Square, for example, in Egypt, street theater, graffiti, leafleting, graphic design was a part and is a part of the resistance. And it has always been. Why? Because sometimes sloganeering and fact-finding and giving anecdotes about politics don't work. You want to get out your anger and your pain and your passion. And you can actually only do that through art. And art is eternal. It lives forever. So we have got to claim that space as artists.
Tazim, would you like to come in on that?
I'd like to add to that, actually, because I think what I kind of mentioned earlier as well is I feel the struggle for gender equality and all these things, and like you were saying, it's about political mobilization, and I think it's connected to a lot of other struggles. And actually, the creation of art is also a privilege. In my experience, meeting women who work all day, they work in the fields all day, they take care of their kids, they don't have time to do anything else. They're dealing with multiple responsibilities and barely making, you know, $2 a day. Or actually, they don't even make that money because their husbands keep that money. These women are not creating art. There is no, and that's really sad that we do live in a world where it is that unequal, that there are people that are that poor, that a lot of these things are a privilege. Art is a privilege. I don't think that, although I completely agree with what you're saying, it's been part of movements and its place is so important, but like Pakistan is a 70% rural population, and yes, there's folk songs and there's certain things, but even those get taken over by men. You know, so I think it is important. I think that's just my point, is I think it is a privilege as well to be able to create art.
Thank you very much. I'm conscious there's a lady here who's had her hand up for a while. Do we have a mic, please? Thank you.
I'm just going to say how much I absolutely loved what you were saying about mobilizing women and getting the voice out there, and what you said about we cannot all just sit back and let somebody else have that fight and then reap the benefits for it afterwards, I thought was just fantastic. And I wanted to highlight the fact that we're actually planning a women's conference in Hull next year, because I'm from the Labour Party, so you don't have to be a member of the Labour Party to get involved, but if you are interested, please do come. There's going to be a women's Hull Labour event next year, because it's about that mobilisation. It's about getting women together and saying that what is happening is wrong. And one of the things that makes me so impassioned is the gender stereotyping and how we are cutting off choices for our children at a younger and younger age. I was sent into a fit of rage the other day when I went into Asda and noticed that they have now gendered yogurt, right? You can't, it's true, you have gendered yogurt and gendered baby bell. I mean, my goodness, what will happen to a boy if he eats the butterfly yogurt instead of the football one? And this at a younger and younger age, and we should be starting thinking about in this country, if we're going to grow this new layer of activism, if we're going to get the women that are going to stand up, fight back and say, hell no, I'm not taking this, then we need to start by telling our younger children that the choices are open to them, that the choices that we had, because they're getting closed off more and more.
Absolutely, 100%. Well done. I have to say, on that line, I spent, some would say wasted, I don't think so. I spent a good 10 minutes last night at about 7:10 having an absolute fit about a Kinder Surprise advert. Seriously? I mean, I had to be calmed down. And it was my frustration that I would never, ever have wanted the pink little doll that came out. I wanted the action figures. Mm. And I went to bed later on about 12:30, and my less comment whilst when I'd got into bed and I was reading away to my partner was this: I know I'll go on. This is probably going to be the last statement of this panel. This would be a disgrace, but I'm going to finish it. I know I'll go on. But that Kinder Surprise egg thing really got to me. And that was the last thing I said at about 12:30 last night. But you're absolutely right. I think through all of the conversations taking place today and way outside of this, and it's great that WOW's here, but these conversations are happening. We have people across the globe that are standing up. We have to start to change the social norms across the globe that are narrowcasting our ability as women, as young girls, and they're narrowing our options. And the only way to do that is as a we, as a collective. And we're all here. Let's make today count. Thank you very much. Thank you to the incredible panel.
Can I just say another massive thank you to this amazing panel? My name is Madeline O'Reilly and I'm the festival programmer of the WOW Festival. And I just want to tell you about some amazing things that are continuing to happen throughout the afternoon. So just starting now, we have the amazing Beatrix Campbell, feminist activist who is doing a talk in Mortimer West, and that's just about to start now. So just channeling this energy that's come out of this talk, if you want to continue that discussion, Mortimer West is the place to go. We also have Art Celebrating Equality that's happening in Victoria Bar at 4:00, which is supported by the Warren. And if you're interested in the conversation about art leading the way, that we've got a group of young people who are doing spoken word and live music. And then we also want to invite you to our open forum at 4:30, where it's your chance to hear your voice heard. We're going to have an open discussion where if there's any issues you want to talk about, we're going to have those conversations in Mortimer West at 4:30. Can I take another opportunity to say a massive thank you to the panel?
Hello, everybody. Everybody who's just been in the last discussion, I just wanted to announce I'm behind you for those who are looking at the stage. I'm behind you. I'm over here. Hello. So I'm Madeline O'Reilly, Festival Programmer, and I just wanted to take this opportunity to also invite you to come and see the amazing pink-hatted Freedom Chorus, who are just going to share some of their music with you today. So thank you very much.
we're really pleased to be able to be part of this event. I mean, how amazing. We're here in our pink pussy hats, as you can probably see. For those of you who don't know, these became the symbol of the women's marches post-Trump election and are an ironic statement to him about his comments about pussies. So we have our own pink pussy hats on. This next song we're going to do is called I Can't Keep Quiet, and it became the anthem of the women's marches. And we'd love it if you're able to join in part of it. So I'm just going to teach you the very easy joiny in bit, and then you'll hear it when it comes. So can we get the ooh? That with us. Ooh, so it's just ooh. Ooh, just carry on. Ooh, ooh. So we do three of those, then we do this. Ooh, ah. Okay, so we're just going to practice that. And then straight after that, it goes, let it out, let it out, let it out now. Just practice that bit. Let it out, let it out, let it out now. Let it out, let it out, let it out now. Let it out, let it out, let it out now. Right, we're going to practice the oohs and the let it out. So you ready? So it's three oohs, then one ooh ah, and then let it out. And then right at the end of the song, we do a big roar. So you can just join us with that. Okay, ooh, ready, two, three, four. Ooh, three more. Ooh, two more. Ooh, this time with the R. Ready then. Excellent. You'll know when it comes because we'll just suddenly be going, ooh. So just join us. Can't go wrong. Just women's anthem, women's protest song, and that's what it is. It's not a choir song. So we hope you enjoy our version, and we can't wait to do it with you. Your face and know your place. Shut up and smile. I could do that.